One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone, sorry, Baz and Toffee TV just come in and just fucking dropped absolute nonsense bombshells in the room and then walked off. Apparently Liverpool are shite, yeah, funny that. They only had 10 men, Chris. I mean, not like Liverpool. I've got no experience of seeing Liverpool play with 10 men this season. I'm being good with it.
They were, it suited them to go down to 10
literally,
men anyway.
Yeah, literally. Best thing that ever happened to Sean Dyche. Right, Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Clubb, and probably when he comes back from the toilet, Barry Cass, to talk on this week's Red Men Originals podcast about the Merseyside derby. And then we're going to do some bits and pieces around that in part two as well. But yes, Chris, another day, another derby, another brand new way of breaking Evertonian hearts. That's what Merseyside derbies are for, right?
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to sit next to your dad during the game and he turns around straight after the Canate thing. I was like, they'll be talking about that for 20 years. And I was laughing my head off because I know that Baz has already written it down somewhere. In fact, someone might be getting tattooed with it in there right now. Never know.
The big book of Everton injustices.
VAR was absolutely fine. There was nothing wrong with VAR. The referee was awful.
Excellent, strong officiating. Finally,
that's not the fair. Like my brother said this to me yesterday. He's like, VAR. I'm like, actually, VAR got everything right.
Yeah.
They actually did in the game. The referee made a terrible decision not to send Canate, but that's not the VAR. They can't, even when they're having a go, they have a go at the wrong thing because they're angry.
Yeah.
It's glorious.
And just to clarify, this whole replay thing, like, ha ha ha, it's a funny joke. It's a bit like the B-sharps thing. If it gets less funny, the more you hear it. Like, it's not the same. These two things are not... Anyway, whatever.
But my daughter does this though, like, you know, she wants to be like the class clown and stuff like that, so she'll choke on her food and we'll laugh, and then she'll try and choke on her food. It's like, it's not funny the second time, Lara.
Yeah. It's a cry for help. Or she doesn't like it, or it's a edgy protest against your food.
Stop trying to choke on your food.
Yeah. But yeah, look, ultimately, Boss, you know, I don't know how it doesn't really compete because it's not up there with Curtis Jones winners or, you know, Shaqiri goals or, you know, Christ, Divock Origi. But it's just lovely beating them, and we never seem to do it in a truly straightforward way. And I'll be honest, they are crying about that Canate thing. We'll come on to that. But I like that. I like the fact that there's always a new thing that they've got to be upset about. Now, Jordan Pickford talking about, like, the officiating, how they always get the decisions. Shut up, Jordan Pickford, you beaut. It's just, I makes it more enjoyable for me.
It does. And it's always going to make it more enjoyable, isn't it? Something had to make that game enjoyable, didn't it? Because it wasn't a spectacle as such, was it? It was a bit of a difficult watch. I don't think Liverpool really got out of second gear. I don't think Liverpool really needed to get out of second gear. And, you know, as you mentioned sort of a little bit earlier, Sean Dyche would probably... You could hang his hat on that sending off. It's something to go and get the team around and try and, you know, get them together to go and, you know, prove everybody wrong and all that type of stuff. But as far as the game was going, we were well the better side anyway. I thought it made it harder for us to go on and get the victory when they went down to 10 men. But ultimately, we did our job. That's four home wins out of four games in the Premier League so far this season. You know, two goals conceded, I think it is. That's a good start to the season for us, and we're making Anfield a fortress again on the sly.
Yeah. Chloe, I want to talk about your pre-match nerves. You weren't in a good place when we were driving to Anfield.
Or when we were walking to Anfield.
Or walking
when we were
to
having
Anfield
a drink before the game started.
When you got into Anfield. At what point did those nerves... Was it us scoring the penalty.
When they put Michael Keane on the pitch, I thought, absolutely. I was like, you know what, lads? Five at the back is actually a really great decision. But when you're having to bring on Michael Keane to do that, it almost contradicts how good of a decision it is. As soon as I saw him step on the pitch, I knew he was going to do something. And he decided to play basketball in the box, gave us a penalty. And that was wonderful for me. I did... Being truthful, though, it was when we got the second goal when I finally didn't feel ill. because I was like, at around 60, it wasn't nerves, it was disappointment. It was a case of, like, they've been down to 10 men here for this long. We're much better than that. Absolutely crap. Anything but 3 points is awful. And then when we went 1-0 up, it was, we've actually got something to lose here. Let me worry about that as well. So the worry just changed. And they did absolutely not an all game. And I their Twitter, I'm so proud of the lads today. I don't know what you saw that made you proud. Because I could not imagine having to watch them week in, week out and try and support them. They were horrific.
If you'd ever want to know what like gaslighting is, it's Evertonians taking positives from their football matches is being told that there's some heroic purpose behind everything that they're suffering. Dan, all that has been discussed so far, I'm saying to Chloe on the walk, you know, you were saying it's cold and I'm nervous, and I said it's quite mild and it's Everton. So you know, yes, it was a bit more of a problem. It was harder work than I think we would have liked. I agree. I think the 10-man thing actually did play into their hands because it meant they didn't have to try and make a game of it.
Yeah.
And that probably made it therefore harder for us to break it down. But I don't know about you. I never felt like we weren't going to win that game.
No, not necessarily. I was a bit with Chloe in sort of the morning. You always get that sort of derby belly because it does mean a little bit more. Albeit Everton, they're a terrible side. We're a very good side. If it was any other sort of mid to lower table Premier League team, Anfield, regardless of the kickoff time, you just expect it to be quite a straightforward win. But the derby factor and the fact that they'd love nothing more than to take something, anything from us, does sort of add to it a little bit and add to those sort of those pre-match nerves and anxiety and whatever. But yeah, overall, it was relatively straightforward. Never really felt like with any danger of losing the game necessarily. Obviously, had the one big chance early doors with Calvert-Lewin, which he might expect to do better with. Like that sort of... As a moment in time for Everton and Sean Dyche, they'll look back at that and go, if we just get that, because all of a sudden then they put all men behind the ball earlier than they do anyway, and you never know how the game pans out there. But my sort of overriding feeling from the entire game was that going out to 10 men was a blessing in disguise for them.
Yeah.
Because every time they attacked us and we nicked the ball back, we were just red arrows time at them. And it felt like a matter of time before we took the lead via a counter-attack because it was 4-on-3 numerous times. And a couple of times we get the pass wrong or the wrong decision or the weight or whatever it may be, and there's one moment we get it right and Ashley Young gets back and we thought, wow, he's still on the pitch, makes a brilliant last ditch tackle Zaniah. So it felt like whilst Everton felt like they could get something, there was a game on, and the minute they didn't, they just shut up shop and went, well, look, we're going to make it hard for you, and that suited them and went against us really.
You know, the thing with that, I was watching, obviously I had a really nice vantage point up at Kenny for the game, and those counter-attacks that you're talking about, they tended to come from corners.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really interesting sort of tactic from Dyche, because it kind of said to me he threw everybody forward and the last man was ahead of the centre circle, wasn't it? And it was inviting us to do the counter-attack, and it never changed actually when it went down to 10 men. But thinking back after the game, I was like, why did he continue to do that? And I came to the conclusion that he only thought he could score goals from set pieces. Mm. And whether it was 10 men or 11 men, he was going to throw as many bodies in the box as possible because that was their best chance of scoring goals against us. But it was also their biggest weakness for the game. And everything else in between, I thought he defended pretty well, to be honest with you. I thought he was solid about it and stuff like that. But that Diaz chance came from one of them, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But and I don't know, I didn't watch the player ratings after the game or listen to it, but Alisson Becker made a massive difference in those situations because he was so dominant from corners and from free kicks. And like, he had that one save from Calvert-Lewin, didn't he? But how many times did he stop a corner going into the box? And like, they were having a man on him and they were all over him and stuff. And I was like, that's why he's the best in the world, because not only can he make those saves, but he's taken all the stress out of their best situations. And I just thought that was wicked.
Yes, no, I think that's right. There was one where he... a flap has become a bit of a generic term for when a goalkeeper doesn't get a total punch to the halfway line on it, but he palms it away, doesn't he, at the back post. But other than that, you know, they were doing everything in their power to upset him. There was what, like, they were putting Branthwaite on his toes, they were trying to disrupt everything he did, and he just handled it brilliantly. And this is the thing, they did nothing. And again, I'm sure when they're going through their things, they'll point to, well, we went down to 10 men and then it was difficult. And it was, but it's because their manager chose to play five at the back from then on. He got to half time and he took their two creative outlets off and put a centre back and a right back on, effectively. And again, comparing Liverpool and Everton's not right because they're at different levels. But
I just wish they were leagues apart.
But I've said this before. I don't care. I'd happily be one place apart in the league as long as it's first to second. That doesn't bother me. But Dyche ball went, came out in full flow because they didn't have any hopes of getting anything out of that football match, and his entire hopes were pinned on old school British manager, keep it tight, keep it to within a goal, and it's only one set piece away from us nicking something, a heroic point or whatever from this. So I'm glad that it totally caved, and I'm glad ultimately, I mean, they took Michalenko off, who was having a really good game, and then ultimately we scored, you know, off the back of it. So yeah, it basically fucking serves him right for being so shit. But they did nothing all game long, and even that, like the Calvert-Lewin one, that's a chance. But I mean, I'm no expert on the XG stuff, but like headers are not, having a header from that position is not the same as having a chance at your feet from that kind of thing. It's nowhere near as big a chance.
He'd have
as a
expected
header
to do him, better. Though. He'd have expected to do better with that. It was, the cross wasn't strong enough. It made it difficult for him. Yeah. You know, it's one of them where you can get power on a header, can't you? But where Van Dijk, I think it was Van Dijk, was, it made it difficult for him to get power on it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And ultimately, everything they did in an attacking sense came from something we fucked up. And in that instance, it was McAllister giving the ball away, wasn't it? And putting us under pressure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's speak about the Ashley Young red first, Chloe. I mean, it's the first time Liverpool have had a player sent off via two yellow cards for 8 years. 8 years. Just to clarify, that's not made up, by the way, for anyone watching or listening or wants something to talk about with the mates, I suppose, on the football teams. The last player to be sent off via the medium of two yellow cards against Liverpool was Sadio Mane for Southampton, which I find mad for the start. Because in my memory, I think Everton get a player sent off that way every time we play them at Anfield, but apparently not. What did you make of it? Because for me, neither of those look like anything other than yellow cards.
He didn't argue. He didn't argue. I was looking at the commotion that was going on around the referee, and only then did I realise that Ashley Young was halfway down the tunnel. Like, he didn't argue. He'd got off. The first one, he's been done and wiped him out, and he's taken the yellow. The second one was a bit mad because from where we were, it was obviously the other end, so the cop couldn't really see it well. We all thought it was a foul, but because the ball had went out for what you'd assume a corner if he got his toe on it, there was like screams for it, but the referee was so delayed with it. And once he gave the foul, there was just, it's got to be a yellow then. It's got to be a yellow then. He's literally going into the box if he doesn't make that tackle. Yeah. And the referee gives himself time to think about it. Eventually does give the second yellow. Ashley Young doesn't argue about any of it. And Luis Diaz, with the ball, quite a couple of those counter-attacks in the first half, with the ball, Luis Diaz's first touch wasn't good. It was awful, actually. And sometimes he messed up, but he changed the game because he got a red card for them. And also, I mean, he could have had a penalty. But he changed the game with just being really fast and really quick with his brain. And yeah, it's a clear red card. It's two yellows, a red. And I know we're going to get onto Canate, so I'm not going to say what I think about that. But yeah, I don't get why. I haven't heard anyone argue over it.
Diaz set him up as well, because a couple of minutes early, he cuts inside and whips a ball in. And then 2 minutes later, he goes around the outside
and kicked the ball away as well. Ashley Young kicked the ball away 5 minutes before, didn't get a yellow card when everyone was screaming for it. So he had it coming.
He's their most experienced player on the pitch. He's
Doesn't mean he's good though.
7 years.
Yeah,
he's been doing a very bang average job for a very long time.
In fact, we did it in the preview. Match preview with Baz, the upper preview, and he was saying he mentioned James Milner, and I was like, yeah, James Milner and Ashley Young, again, these are not the same things. They might be the same age, but Ashley Young was eking out his career in Serie A. And I know, Chris, you're the biggest Serie A super fan going, but it's fucking shite. It's a shite league of football.
I absolutely was 25 years ago. I don't think it's fair to keep saying that I am now.
Nobody watches
Serie A.
Yeah, nobody cares about Serie A. It's rubbish. But basically, he was eking out his career in Serie A when James Milner was putting down
I think all I said was Milan could do a job, and I think Milan got the draw that week.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah, you went on a staunch defence of the quality of Napoli, and therefore defending the whole quality of Serie A. It's a garbage league, and Ashley Young was garbage when he played in it. And now he was a winger, turn midfielder, turn fullback. Again, James Milner trajectory.
Turn bird shit catcher.
He's garbage. Absolutely. But again, Dan, they need cooler heads to prevail in those kind of circumstances. Yeah. He's stupid. He gets the booking. I mean, look, I think we can blend this in with the Canate chat, I think, because I think Canates are just plain old, dead simple, run of the mill, just stop your opponent getting away. They are cynical, but they're not dangerous. They're not violent moves. The Ashley Young first one is similar to that, but he leaves his entire leg in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the second one, it's just a foul. It's basically a tackle from behind.
Yeah, and where it is on the pitch obviously plays a huge part in that as well, because albeit Canate's both are yellow cards, at no point is he stopping his man getting inside the penalty area and a really dangerous situation sort of coming after it. But it was a mismatch from the word go, really, Diaz against Young. I highlighted it in our build-up show beforehand. I said, that is where we should be looking to get a hell of a lot of joy, because albeit Young is all the things we've mentioned in terms of experience and stuff like that, the difference in pace between the two, and if Diaz got the ball quickly enough and was direct enough with his running and that type of thing, he was always going to cause problems. I didn't necessarily think it'd end up in a red card, but I just knew he was going to give him nightmares all afternoon. And if they weren't quick enough in getting to Jack Harrison or Dwight McNeil around that to make it a 2-on-1, it was always going to happen. And as we've seen, Diaz, credit to him, Chloe's right in terms he wasn't necessarily at it, but what he did do well is he made Ashley Young make decisions, and he made bad ones, as it turned out, because really, you're right, there's a highlight his experience and it's the cooler head type of thing, because when you have been booked so early, it's up to your manager then to take you off and go, I'm getting you out of the firing line, mate, because he's 15 years younger than you, much quicker than you. That could happen again. So Dyche is kind of messed up in not taking him off straight away, because he easily could have done, especially after he kicked the ball away. But also, Young knows he can't go to ground. If anything, he's got to let him go, albeit who knows, we might score. Yeah. He can't do that again.
The problem you've got with Evan, and it was one, but again, I joked about it in the upper previews, who's going to be the lad who does that, who loses the head and gets sent off in this game? No, we haven't really got players like that. I was like, there's always one. It's someone who thinks they're buying into the culture of the football club by, it's a derby, so I've got to be physical. They're trying to win fans. They're trying to win the fan base over by showing how much it matters to them. But you get a bunch of players who aren't that type of player doing stupid things. Ross Barkley, Rodwell, Davies were all lads like that who were... tried, I don't know, somehow I'd like someone whispering, dogs of war, it's the dogs of war, remember the dogs of war, remember, get physical, get in their face, the derby. You're not that player, mate, just calm it down, just use what you're good at instead. And him slide tackling Luis Diaz on the edge of the box, just idiotic. Let's do Canate, Chris.
Before we get there though, why has no one spoke about Onana's shot trying to chip Alisson from about 40 yards out, and it doesn't even get off the floor.
We were joking, he definitely watched the Beckham doc and went, why has nobody tried this since David Beckham? And of course people have. People try it all the time. It's just really, really hard to do.
So it was incredible.
Ibu Kanate, should he have been sent off?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Nah, carry on. Why?
Two bookable offences.
Yes.
really easy. On a weekend where Ashley Young gets sent off for it, Kanji was it for Manchester City? Yeah. For almost, exactly the same thing. He knew what he was doing. He tried to make it difficult for him to get past. The break was on for Everton. It was two yellow cards. He should have been sent off. Sound.
One's gone in our favour.
I am...
It's weird, isn't it, how I do and, wonder.
And the fact that Klopp just went, turned straight round to Matip and went, fucking get up, lads. And then, and because that just pissed them off more.
Bill Canales was just pissing glorious. Himself as well, laughing 5 minutes later, like pissing himself on the bench. That would have, the blue fume would have been
my
life.
Way. But it was just, it was perfect.
It was, yeah, the Klopp substitution really compounded the whole thing, didn't it? And it was like Dyche, that was what Dyche was hottest about, of like, he knows he should have, that's why he's taking them off. And look, I
get
thought
the big book.
I know.
Get the big book.
The big book. Get your quill.
Bottom ink. Blue ink.
Blue. Make it blue. yeah. Honestly, the big book of Everton Injustices. Check it out from all great blue retailers. They had a new chapter every single season.
Yeah.
Klopp doing that did absolutely enrage them because I think Dyche used it as almost evidence to suggest he felt he got away with one, and I think that's. Right. I do think they were going to make that change anyway. I'm not sure. I mean, Klopp turned around to the bench and went, like he screamed at Matip. He screamed at probably John Achterberg, whose job it is to hold the ball up. Like, hurry up, you pricks. Get him on. Get him off. Fair play. Look, he's got that opportunity to do that. If that was a pre-season friendly, he wouldn't have been booked and you'd have gone, do us a favour. Take him off, mate, because he should be off anyway. I contend, though, Chloe, and it's weird to say this because we've seen a lot of this idea that referees kind of like to level things up, but I do wonder if I think the referees have been told not to send as many players off, which sounds mental because 4 red cards got given out on that one day in the Premier League on Saturday.
Thus proving that they can't follow rules.
No, exactly. But I think
I think it's the problem with the refs in this country, to be honest.
I think they were trying their best to try and fly beneath the radar a bit. And I honestly wonder whether Jung being sent off actually almost helped Konate in a weird way, because I don't think he wanted to preside over a football match that had 2 red cards in it somehow, because I can't see any other reason why Konate doesn't get sent off, because by the way we're interpreting all these things, not one of us looked at either of them and went, he's stopping the guy running through, it's an obvious yellow card.
Maybe that's the case, but therefore they're not actually doing their job then. Your job is to just give the decisions what they should be, and Konate should have been sent off. It's that simple. There's people who say the more I watch it, the more I don't think it's a foul. It's a foul. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing in that moment. And I think we've got maybe one person behind him. And to be fair, Beto doesn't really have loads of support, and maybe that helps Konate at the fact that they've got 5 men at the back. They've gone a 5-4-1 or a 5-3-2, whatever it was. And because, what was it?
They would have had the 10, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. So sorry. 5-3-1.
Yeah.
It's just a foul. It's a yellow card. It's cynical. And I'm fine with it because for the past 3 weeks, people have been telling me to just get on and that referees make mistakes. So I'm now going to give you that exact same vibe. Everyone, these referees are incompetent. I think you should just really get on with the mistakes. They are human after all, and humans all make mistakes. And if you really want to fight it, all you need to do is get them suspended for next weekend. But don't you worry, they will be back again, so you might as well shut the hell up. But yeah, he should have been sent off. He wasn't. Craig Pawson has done a madness. But also, if we'd have been 10v10, it wouldn't have helped them, because Sean Dyche would have felt like, I've got to go for it now. I can't sit here being, you know, level terms in terms of players and not try and get something from this game. And in terms of doing that, did there be more spaces and the counter-attacks would have been on time and time and time
and
again?
And we're boss with 10 men.
Yes.
More importantly, I just want to have a general chat, though, Dan, just to kind of move this forward, because I got a message from my cousin about it. It was around the Ashley Young stuff during the game. And he was like, what are they trying to do with all this? Because I don't think both the yellows and both and one of the Konate one plus the one that he didn't get, we can all sit here and go, I can see perfectly legitimately why you get a yellow card for that, because that's the way footy's gone. But at the same time, why have the rules gone that way? Because this is getting worse and worse in football. Football is not a more violent sport. There's no more, it's, you know, 5 years ago, football was not like, didn't have this rash of just horrendous, you know, horrendous injuries. It wasn't like brutal game sport by any means. So
like, what are they trying to achieve? Because they're effectively making it easier for players to be sent off. And I don't get what the point of that is, unless are they trying to add the drama? Does this go back into, they're trying to create a world where there's more respect, or they're trying to take certain challenges? Do they want people to take tactical fouls out of the game? Is that what they're trying to actively discourage? Because that, for me, is part and parcel of the whole game of stopping your opponent getting through. And I'm not... it's weird. I don't mind. I'm accepting of these being yellows, but I'm not sure how I've become accepting of yellows being handed out.
Yeah, it's a strange one, actually, isn't it, when you really think about it? But it's almost as if at some point in the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 seasons, those became yellow cards, and there's always been yellow cards thereafter. It's like somebody, one of the refs maybe, decided that you just can't do that anymore, and they're sort of carte blanche. Every single referee has gone, oh, actually, yeah, he's right. You can't do that type of foul. But I wonder whether, in terms of sort of an explanation, I wonder whether it's coming with sort of the rise in popularity of the DM, and that's the type of foul that they commit all the time. We've seen Fernandinho get away with them forevermore for Man City, of
Rodri.
Course. But I think maybe now that position has become so pivotal, and they're the fouls that they commit all the time, they become more common in the game, perhaps. I'm not quite sure, but you're right. There is just an acceptance now. And it's even from a fan's perspective, and certainly from referees one, and the players one, they almost, as soon as they drag someone back in the halfway line, they know straight away, don't they? It's a cynical is the word. You used it earlier. But for me, I can't remember a time, but they sort of in the past 5, 6 years, where they weren't just yellow card.
I don't
the most straightforward yellow card ever.
I don't remember my entire... but in my mind they were.
I was thinking about this because you mentioned this too, was on Saturday, I think, and I sort of came to the conclusion that it was like, maybe it's just they don't want so many stoppages in football, and I think that the way that the game's gone, technically everybody are just better players and stuff, and now because of that there are more and more examples of players trying to stop the game and not go for the football, and actually when you look at both yellow cards, I've got more of a problem with Ashley Young's second being a yellow card than his first, because there's no genuine attempt to make the football in his first challenge. Mm-hmm. In the second, there is.
Yeah.
And that's the one where I go, when did that become a yellow card for just being slightly and late?
This goes into this thing. I always turn my nose up at ideas when you throw totally outrageous by the existence of football concepts out. So when people say like the orange card, for example, or they talk about sin bins, I immediately balk because I just don't want anything rugby involved in my sport, you know what I mean, as much as possible. But the more and more you look at that, it's not violent conduct, really. You know what I mean? No one was injured. There was no goal scoring opportunities, clear cut, denied. You know what I mean? It wasn't sweeping someone's legs out when they're clean through. We all know those challenges we've seen. They're very few and far between is what I'm driving at. Nothing about those, like, all you're effectively doing by sending, and this is me defending the sending off of Ashley Young, by the way, is like, all you're doing by sending Ashley Young off for that is making it determining the flow of the football match, and actually ruining the flow of a football match. Whereas, I don't know, I've never been keen to say, well, stick him off the pitch for 5 minutes, and that's your advantage, and then he gets to come back in. But half an hour into the game is irreparably change, probably for the worse. And again, we won this, so I shouldn't be sat here really complaining. A win's a win in a Merseyside derby, fucking laughing. But you know, if he's punched Luis Diaz in the head because he's lost it, send him off and don't let him come back. But those little accumulative fouls to change a game on that just seems, I don't know, it feeds into the pettiness of how games are being officiated for me, and that's just stupid. Kicking the ball away and getting sent off for kicking the ball away in a moment of just stupidity, that's not losing your head and breaking someone's leg. That's you've kicked the ball away. It's like, I don't know.
It's wasted as much time as a goalkeeper wastes on a goal kick. Every goal kick. Like, it's not actually in the grand scheme of things, especially with multi-ball. You kick that ball away, great, pass the other one.
Yeah.
It really make any difference.
The whole thing just, again, it just feeds back into this weird, like, school teacher trying to be really panicky over every little thing because of what are you achieving by it? You know what I mean? You're creating a bunch of rules, and the more rules you create, the more holes there are in those rules. Now, I'm talking about potentially making more rules or changing them, but have a think about what those rules are meant to achieve. What does that mean?
Honestly, I do think it's the flow of the game. I think it's to take out the challenges where people aren't making an attempt at the ball. Yeah. And I've got no problem with that. I think if you aren't making an attempt at the ball, it is a kind of cheating.
Yeah.
Because you just know you're too late, so you're doing whatever you can.
Yeah.
And that's why I've got more of a problem with the yellow card than the second one, because that is a yellow card. Should it be? I don't know.
Well, I think that's a good point because you're right. They're the ones that have drastically changed. Is if you're making a legitimate attempt to play the ball and you miss, is that an instant
he'd
yellow card?
The ball if Diaz didn't put his foot there last minute.
Yeah.
And so his foot was in a perfect position to take the ball away. And all the attackers know is, I don't actually have to control this and keep it in. I just have to get my foot between their foot and the ball and it's a yellow card. And that's where you go, actually over the last 15 years, that now has changed almost unrecognisably.
And you know, this is the thing, we're not talking about, because there's something we talk about in the car, you know, they outlawed the tackle from behind after Paul Elliott had his leg broken and had his career ended. And you watch, there's a great video, and it's Graham Lassau watching his England performance. I think they played Brazil in like the 90s, and he's watching it back, and you can find it on YouTube, just search like Graham Lassau reacts or something like that. It's been years since I watched it. It's brutal. Like, I mean, he'd have been sent off in 3 seconds if that was played in the modern game. That's different. We've curbed that now. But you're right. It's putting too much stakes on legitimate attempts to win the balls off. I just think it's a bit mad. I mean, and we've had bigger issues with refereeing in recent weeks. Hmm. But do you guys know your thoughts on it? You know, if there's anything you would actively change, or do you think it's fine as it is, ultimately? Yeah, let us know. Costas Tsimikas, Chloe Bloxham. No, he would not. You're shaking your head.
I knew you were going to come to me with it.
Because you hate Costas Tsimikas.
Oh, no, I love Costas. I love the way to say his name.
He was the one who we all looked at the team and went, okay, that's where it's going to sort of, the game might hang on him. No Andy Robertson. There's going to be a lot of games passed his way in the next weeks and months. What did you make of his performance?
He was all right, yeah. The first half, I think I wanted to murder him. When he was in that dugout and there was a football on our pitch and they were attacking, I could have throttled the man. Look, I don't know.
Wait, until he didn't run off. When he didn't run off, when he was getting subbed and he's walking, it's like, hurry up, Costas.
It wasn't even like the in-game moments that did my head in. It was when he was sat on a dugout fuming with Everton players whilst they were attacking our end.
Did that make the TV coverage, Dan?
No, I didn't see that.
So,
no.
Costas gets bundled. Does he get like bundled off the pitch a bit? The ball's out and it's around the dugout and he's chasing this ball down to bring it back and to take a throw in. The ball's already in play. They've carried on and he's it must only be about 3 or 4 seconds, but it felt like about a minute and a half that he was scrabbling around. It was like Rocky chasing the chicken.
It's on the pitch, Costas.
We were all fuming at him. I didn't think he was spectacular. I didn't think he was horrific. It's an area where I worry if you come up against a better side than Everton. Mm-hmm. I really do. I can't deny that. I think going forward, you know, he's really good over set pieces. I really like him. I don't think he has the recovery pace of if someone puts it past him and gets in behind him. And I just slightly worry more defensively when we go to a back three. It doesn't suit him. It doesn't suit him. But I don't think he put in a horrific performance. It was the moment of pure like, what are you doing? That did my head in, where he was just going to retrieve a ball when they were on the attack down his side. When it was like his number came up, and we were like, oh, that is the correct decision, yeah. And look how attacking we're going. And as you turn around and expect the players to be on the pitch, he's walked not even a yard because he's gone that slow.
he sped up pretty quickly when he heard the rising hubbub. What are you doing?
It was 0-0. We were all fuming. So he was all right, yeah. Sometimes in the first half, he lost the ball too easily.
He was fine.
But yeah, once again, he was fine. He wasn't spectacular.
He wasn't called upon defensively a lot, was he? Is the point.
No, and that's second half. A problem.
So
he's just that thing, isn't he? Of like, there's got to be one to keep an eye on. If you've gone into that game and he's your big fear, everything he does that isn't utter perfection is going to feed into that fear. I do think there's something down where we're going to have to remember how to play with him in that position because he can't play it like Andy Robertson. And I thought it was interesting. I thought Gomez was brilliant when he came on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy playing on his wrong foot on that side, but actually Gomez loves getting up and down. He's got pace. You know, I think Tsimikas was forever looking for that, I'll take a touch. I've got half a yard of space here and I'll whip a ball in. He put a couple of good ones in early doors, which is interesting because it's so far away and it's so long away when you're coming out the match. I didn't even remember that. It was only when I went back and watched it again. There's going to be an interesting conversation, I think, in the coming weeks between someone like Joe Gomez. Does Gerald Quanta get a little bit more of a look in if it's more of a centre-back role? Yeah. But Costas was fine, But I also don't think he necessarily put to sleep any doubts that he's the main man with Andy Robertson.
No, I'd absolutely agree with that wholeheartedly, to be honest. I think a couple of deliveries were really sort of noteworthy, and you thought that's what he's very good at, and that's where he does shine through. But I agree. I think Joe Gomez's little cameo at it, for me, has only sort of further instilled the belief that Gomez could do it. And obviously Jurgen Klopp was at pains to say in the press conference, it's not just Tim McCarthy, it's Gomez. It's, you mentioned Luke Chambers as well, who interestingly played for the 21s against Benfica yesterday, and he'd been injured before that. So perhaps we'll see a bit of him in the Toulouse game or the Bournemouth game thereafter. But yeah, I thought it was fascinating that Klopp mentioned these other lads and then went to Gomez so soon in the game. I would not be shocked in the slightest if Joe Gomez got a decent run at left back, because Tim McCarthy is fine. But you mentioned there, how do you play with Tsimikas? It is different to Robertson. Is it an easier transition to go to someone like Gomez? Potentially, certainly, if you are going to go to a back three at times like we do, I wouldn't shock me in the slightest if Gomez got a run.
It was interesting that he also referenced that Jarrad Brantwaite is a left-footed centre-half as well. Like, it was a very, very specific pointed piece of knowledge.
Yeah. He was brilliant, by the way. Yeah. And I actually think Tarkowski was really good for them as well.
He was brilliant. There was a moment where a ball's coming out of the air and he goes to kick it in that second half and he just misses the ball completely, and the entirety of the stadium absolutely took the piss out of him.
He was solid.
He was good aside from that. Yeah, I'll give him that. But that was hysterical.
Klopp didn't fuck around with the subs, did he, Chris? You know, I think there was a real sense, again, it's Everton. That probably should be enough, but it's 10-man Everton. We're at home. Liverpool need these 3 points. They shouldn't be in question. I mean, we effectively went to 2 at the back with the substitutions that we made for a bit. Because I mean, the lad next week, you figure that out. It's like, is it a back three? Yes, it's a back three, but it's Trent in it, so it's not a back three.
But the bad thing is, Diaz just knew what he was doing straight away. Yeah. Like, I don't know whether there was a mention of that at half time or something, that was going to come in, because as soon as he lined up, he was there, and I was like, okay, Diaz knows, but he's the other side of the pitch. How does he know that that's coming? Like, but he was brilliant, and that actually freed him up. It gave him more time and more space on the ball, and it was kind of inevitable then that he was going to be the one to make something happen, because he didn't have to worry about being a defender and sort of playing that sort of left-back, stroke left-wing-back role that he was in, but he was able to get into the penalty area. And again, you know, he could have had a penalty maybe before we get the penalty. I mean, he was just class in that role, to be honest with you. And the extra bodies up front just scared the shit out of Everton. Like, you know, Nunes being up there and having to give them something. Jota was playing brilliantly, slaloming when he had the ball. He was just causing an absolute nightmare for them. Joe Gomez running from deep, obviously, a little bit later on. Does himself in a 6-1-9 without a ring, which was impressive when he took the shot on. It was some shot, but the way he fucking spun round afterwards, he nearly took off like a helicopter. He was just absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I mean, he changed the game. He knew exactly what he was doing, and I think at times we've seen Jürgen, especially like when we were, was it Man United when they got a man sent off against us, or was it Everton one of those years when we lost by a point and he didn't capitalise on those?
I think it was Everton.
It was Everton.
No, I don't know. I can't remember that.
I'm sure it was a game where.
Well, we played. It was
United
with injuries. Off a bench,
it was injuries.
United
yeah.
with injuries, wasn't it?
Was and he didn't capitalise.
Yeah. We drew both of them that year.
He didn't capitalise. He was dead conservative in the way that he approached the substitutions and stuff when they were there for the taking. This time, he's like, I'm not making those mistakes again. I'm going to go out there and we're going to put everything.
And certainly not at Anfield, and certainly not Everton, and certainly not with ten men. No, I loved it, and it was telling as well. Speaks to the maturity, Dan, of what he's doing. When we get the goal, he changes it back. That's when Gomez comes on, and we actually go back to more of a back four. He's like, great, we've pressed all out attack,
yeah,
and then we've got the goal. Okay, the penalty, fine. We can just go back to how we go back to managing this game. Let them come out at us, and you know, it was actually perfect management for that second.
It was absolutely spot on. Yeah, it was. He's nailed it there. And one of the biggest criticisms during Klopp's time, if there are any to be made of his brilliant tenure, are his substitutions and that game management side of things. I don't think he's always got it spot on, but this time he absolutely did. And it was probably a sense of, as you alluded to there, that Everton would have to sort of show at least a little bit of a hand. They haven't done for half an hour, because because they knew it was sort of all hands on deck. Let's try and keep them out as much as possible. But when you go 1-0 down anyway, there's no point just seeing how the game was 1-0, because what do you achieve from that? You keep the goal difference down potentially, but that's it. So they're always going to have to try something. So he probably felt like Everton could win a couple of corners, a couple of sort of set pieces, like Chris said before. And it's at that point, we'll hit them anyway. We'll strike regardless of what formation we're playing. We can go to being more sensible and not have two at the back now. And we can just play our normal footy, and we're likely to score again, of course, as it pans out. That's what we go and do, because the attacking players that we had on and the decisiveness in which we were able to get out from the back was their old game, really. Like that sort of counter-attacking, that up until the sort of final third and that final pass, we were really clinical with that sort of stuff. And obviously the pace and the added quality that we've got was always going to shine through. And for the second goal, obviously, it's McAllister that gets it down, isn't it? And he's got that awareness and that presence of mind, because how many people have just wellied that to the halfway line like minutes to go and gone, let's just get it away from our goal? But he was really calm at the moment.
Yeah, no, brilliant stuff. Bit more on Diaz then, Chloe. Pench outs. I got back in and I put the TNT coverage of it, and Ali McCoist and Rio Ferdinand were incredibly dismissive of that Luis Diaz being fouled in the box pench out. I think we talked about it outside the ground, of like, it's hard to tell because you're in the moment and it looks like it looked nailed on.
Everything's a pen when you're in the ground.
Yeah, of course, absolutely everything is a pen. And the more I watch that back, I can't see how it's not. I mean, the commentators were going, that's a dive, you know. And I know that there's a degree at the end where Diaz lets out a bit of a shout and he does maybe arches the back a little bit. But Patterson, he cuts him back inside. He slides and his knee takes a standing foot away. I don't know. It was just a pen. And I don't know whether that then leads to us them being a little bit more lenient. I don't know what the handballer follows, but I thought that was the clearest one, to be perfectly honest.
Inside the ground, I thought it was a pen, because it was literally right in front of me, and from where we were, you could see that Patterson gets nowhere near the ball, and he does make contact with Luis Diaz. And I think I asked you, I was like, what happened there with that penalty? Because from where we were, it looks like he's made no contact with the ball whatsoever, and just the man. And because in time, it looks faster than probably what he does actually hit Diaz with. Everyone inside that ground thought, how is that not a pen? He's made contact. And to be honest, I haven't watched it back too many times. I saw your video of it. And even then, he gets nowhere near the ball. He just gets the man. But I let it go, because we did get a pen, rightfully so, the second time round. And maybe if we wouldn't have, I'd have been looking at that one over and over and over again. But it was one of them where I don't think there's not enough contact to completely wipe Luis Diaz out, but also the player hasn't made contact with the ball at all. He has made contact with the man. So I'm in the middle of both. I don't think there's enough contact for it to be a nailed on pen, but also this player's nowhere near the ball and has actually made contact with the man instead.
Yeah, I don't know. Adam, have we got the NDI turned on? Yeah. Could we just put the clip up? So yeah, this was from the footage I got, and it's easy to see on the close up, but it's the left knee and the ankle of Diaz. It's just
it's soft, man, if you get that.
I don't think it's a penalty.
Really?
I honestly don't. No, I quote tweeted that. Yes, I don't think it's a pen. I think when VAR first came in, it was first introduced, they were given penalties for stuff like that week in, week out. Yeah. And like any contact in the box, if you don't get the ball, penalty. I don't think it is. I don't think there's enough in it. I really don't. I think if he completely wipes him out, like full pace wiped out, then yeah. But you've got to go to ground. At some point, you're going to touch the opposing player. Let that be for me. It's a contact sport still, like the oldest phrase, but you're going to be contacting the box. Not everything has to be a penalty. I actually don't think, even at the time, I didn't think it was.
I don't think he's dived.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think it's a penalty. I think there needed to be more pace there was not enough contact for it to be a pen, but I wouldn't say it's an out-and-out dive either, because he has made contact.
I'd be livid if that was the other end against us. Livid.
Yeah.
Hit the roof. Like,
my thing for me, I agree. The problem we got with the VAR stuff is this, like, it's a clear, deliberate and obvious error kind of stuff. Whereas that gets given in normal time, I don't think anyone bats an eyelid at that being a penalty, because he does take his leg out when he cuts him back. But we're back into this, aren't we? The referees are still fucking shite. The handball. See, like, I know his arm's out. Go on, Chris, what does an amble?
It's a natural position if you're waiting for a taxi or a bus. That's the only time it's a fucking natural position, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, what a stupid defender, you know what I mean? He's just an idiot. He's the thickest defender in the Premier League.
So
if he's not scoring own goals, he's giving stupid penalties away. He is absolutely useless, inmate. I don't know why he's doing that. If that's for balance, right, sort your equilibrium out, mate. You've got something in your ears. There's something not right here, pal.
He's got a major inner ear issue. Yeah. Bit of a head cold. Yeah, he's fucking rubbish. I don't know. It's one of them, isn't it? Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not turning my nose up on it, but...
Do you think the Diaz one was more of a pen than that?
100%.
Really? Oh, no,
no, that's
I disagree.
A nail on as it gets.
I disagree.
He's playing basketball.
It is. Why is his arm that far out?
Yeah, I mean, it's
but it was funny because obviously in the ground, I don't know what the coverage shows, but they're all around the referee, and Tarkovsky's going, it's by his side, it's by his side. And I think I like shouted to him, you effing weapon, it's out wide. Like, it was just, as soon as it happened, it was a nailed on pen. I cannot believe everyone in that entire stadium could see that, but the ref a yard away couldn't.
Yeah, he's closer to doing every letter of the YMCA than it is to being by his side.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just not no penalty. You can't have your arm out there.
Yeah.
Stop it.
I don't know. It goes back to this thing again. He's not trying to stop the ball, is he? You know what I mean? I'm happy it was a penalty. I thought the other one was more.
I don't think you have to try and stop the ball. I think the point is it in the silhouette of your body?
Yeah.
No,
not just
as simple
that,
as that.
If the ball doesn't hit Michael Keane, does it hit any of our players in the box and lead to a goal?
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Whole thing's bollocks, isn't it? The let's talk about talking about bollocks. Mohamed Salah was fucking rubbish. He was fucking rubbish from start to finish in that game of football. Bags of brace. I think he got man of the match in some, certainly in some quarters. Dan, he was terrible. Mikhailenko absolutely had him on toast. Every time he tried that little ball, the ball played to him on the corner of the box, and he showed a little curled cross that hit the man in front of him every single time without fail. Every time he tried to stand his man up, he really struggled with it. Look, it's elite, isn't it, to then turn that performance and then two clinical moments take your chances. But I'm happy to sit here and have a laugh at how rubbish Mo Salah was, because he was dreadful.
Yeah, he stunk the gaff out. Absolutely stunk the gaff out. He was properly terrible. I seen Virgil van Dijk, funnily enough, I read his interview just before we came down before, and he was praising Mikhailenko's performance. He said, yeah, Salah wasn't at it today. And since Szoboszlai said something similar, didn't he? He was like, kept losing the ball, but we kept giving it back to him. And so on. But van Dijk was sort of saying, Mikhailenko was really good against him, and he was. You've got to praise him. But yeah, Salah was woeful, absolutely woeful. But as you say, gets two big moments and puts the ball in the back of the net twice, and that's kind of what Salah does, I guess. He's normally a lot better than that, of course. But it was interesting, like, normally that was a Jota-esque performance, because Jota's normally crap and then scores at the end.
Yeah.
But Jota, everything he did was boss.
Yeah. And he didn't score.
It was really weird, like Freaky Friday, swap bodies, didn't they? You do that bit, it was such a weird game from that perspective, because Salah was not at it in any way, shape or form. And I mentioned the Young and Diaz battle earlier on. I thought Salah was going to Mikhailenko, but it was the opposite way around. Salah just couldn't get it going at all, could he? I don't know whether his mind was elsewhere or what, but he was dire.
Well, it's mad because he obviously put that video out about Palestine and Israel, didn't he? And I didn't give it a second thought. I thought, oh, it's nice that he's actually used this platform, good humanitarian message. But I was reading the Athletic article around it and how much thought goes into that release and how many takes and how much pressure he's had from all kinds of sides on that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that was it, you know, but like, you forget sometimes how much he carries around with him as an absolute icon. And yeah, I mean, ultimately he's got two goals in a derby, Chris, so I'm not sure he's going to be too upset with his overall performance. But there was almost a bit, like, particularly when he scored the second one, it was a bit almost like apologetic of like, right, cool, we're done with this, let's just go and get
off. I met James after the game, and the first thing he did, it was like he was angry that he scored that goal. Oh god, I don't deserve this, but I'll put it away for you anyway, like. And that's kind of what it felt like. He was really poor, but you know, I must admit, when it came to the penalty, I was thinking that it was Szoboszlai that was going to take it, because he held the ball the entire time, didn't he, up until Mo then comes from nowhere. Because like, Mo was sort of sheepishly looking down, but obviously thinking back now, you know, Henderson used to do that thing where he'd keep the other players away from the penalty taker. And I think it was just a good way of everyone going, well, Szoboszlai's got the football here. No one was anywhere near Salah. He was just sort of pacing on his own. I thought he looked sheepish about it. And I was wondering whether he was going to take the ball off Szoboszlai. And as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, Mo's taking the ball, gone in there. And you're like, that's exactly what we needed. Two really good penalties now he's taken in his last two and stuff. Mm-hmm. Who was the fella who was stood on the spot Virgil. As well? Virgil stood well on the spot. So that's, again, you know, a little bit different way of doing it, but all important parts of how to win football games.
It's interesting. I wasn't going to talk about this, but something I've noticed that Trent does as well is that at the end of every half, he goes over and talks to the referees, and basically almost every game walks off the pitch with the referees and just chats them. And I think it's a very Jordan Henderson thing of making sure you've got a relationship with these people. And I've mentioned Szoboszlai previously of how he's got great leadership. He's got really obvious leadership qualities on the pitch, but you know, Jordan was so good at doing all of the other things. He was never the best player in the team, but he brought all the bits you can choose to add that you're not born with necessarily. He added, and it's great to see actually some of the people kind of pick that up around the pitch. Yeah, really good. Chloe, Harvey Elliott.
Boss.
Brilliant. Absolutely Jesus. Brilliant. What a performance that was off the bench.
Ryan Gravenberch was incredible too. Yep. I'd like to give him props as well. I thought
he's 35.
He's such a silky footballer. Yep. But Harvey Elliott, you could see the desire on him. You could see him when he came on, turn around and go, I'm not having these shit get a point out of us. Absolutely not. He came on, he was everywhere. There was a ball which was like so far, they boosted so far up in the air, and I think they were on the counter if Harvey Elliott doesn't take a good touch, and the touch spins him and he frees the ball away and makes it, and I was like, oh my god. His range of passing, the one that's tipped onto the bar, Jordan Pickford does incredible for. I thought he was immense when he came on. He was full of energy, full of desire, full of heart, full of running, and full of quality. And it wasn't just him trying to go down the left-hand side and feed Salah time and time again. No, he took it upon himself. He'd carry the ball, he'd switch
out.
He might
have been our man of the match.
Yeah, he could have been. He was exceptional when he came on. And he was so unlucky not to have a goal as well. And when that got saved, oh, the way he hit himself, he was fuming. And I was like, don't worry, lads. Like, you've been boss, but...
But they're the moments boss, that are going to determine that, because it's so competitive, that. And obviously, we've got Curtis Jones to come back in as well. And it's interesting, it goes back to like that, the recency bias, but also the distance bias of being in the cop. I didn't really note much of Gravenberch other than some nice neat touches, but then I went and watched that like 2.5 minutes of every touch stuff, god, and I was like, my god, he was unbelievable. It was that one on the edge of the box where it gets fizzed into him, and without looking, he just clips it like to his left across the 18-yard box, and we're in. It's like, that is ludicrous that you should be that good. But actually, what you've got in that group of players, and Szoboszlai comes into this as well, these are young footballers who are all got really big, look like really nice, really good lads as well, really love footy, and I think they're all going to drive each other on. And I thought Elliot was brilliant. Good to see we got a little bit of love for Jota in there as well. But lastly, on the game itself, Darwin, Chris, our counter-attacks were so shit all game, and then there comes Darwin, who is often the man who kind of conspires to kind of tangle himself up. I did wonder if he'd held on to it too long, but ultimately it's a perfect pass to Salah. He puts it on the plate for him, and you know, that's how the game ultimately gets sewn up, is because of Darwin Núñez's composure.
Yeah, and you can see in the celebration from Salah, he's just pointing at him, so he knows exactly who it was. But a little shout out for Szoboszlai actually in the build up to that goal, which I don't think anybody's talking about. Mm-hmm. He's catching up with the two of them, and he's about to get in the way of the pass and just stops. And just at the time that Darwin Núñez has settled himself in for a pass. So really good awareness from all three of the players. You know, Salah to keep himself onside, Szoboszlai to not get involved, and Darwin Núñez for the weight of the pass and drawing the defender before waiting for it. After running 30, 40 yards with the ball at your feet in full flight, everything just seems to be slowing down and coming to him at the moment, doesn't it? And that's exactly what we need from Darwin Núñez. Obviously, the stats are going round at the moment, aren't they? All the goals and assists per 90 and him being top of the Premier League after, I think it's 300 minutes or something played.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that he's having enough impact there now. he's got a connection and has had a connection, I think, going back to last season with Salah anyway. They tend to feed each other quite a lot. Well,
he's got eight Premier League assists and they're all for Mo Salah.
Yeah. More than Sadio Mane, I've seen on the weekend, which is mental.
I mean, they hated each other, remember? They hated each other, Dan.
Over that course of time compared to this course of time, yeah, that's crazy. Madness, like.
It's crazy. Yeah, it is absolutely insane.
That's just something last season where you'd think Darwin Nunes might get stuck in two minds and not know what to do. But what he did was, by holding onto the ball so long, Jordan Pickford had made the decision where he was like, if he shoots here, I look ridiculously stupid, so I need to move over as far as I can to the opposite side.
He did what he did last season.
And he did it. He came out and he got lost somewhere, which just meant as soon as Salah could hit the ball, as long as he got it any part on the right-hand side, it was going in because Jordan Pickford had left so much space. And the composure and the calmness, because as you can imagine, the crowd are screaming for you to pass that ball. To have the calmness and composure to lay it off to him with a perfectly weighted ball in the correct place so Salah can just run onto it and finish it. I'm really, really enjoying watching Darwin Nunes, and it's mad that he's only had three Premier League starts this season, because if I was to choose my front three tomorrow, he'd be our number nine.
Yeah. Go on, Dan. What?
On that very last point, really, yes. But also, like, there's been a few little problems
injury stuff.
So I think that sort of played it. He might have started the weekend rather, if it wasn't for cramp in the week for Uruguay. And he had a toe problem as well.
It reminds me a bit, like last season almost, was it just a training season for a guy we paid £80 million for, but he feels ready now. But it reminds me a bit of Torres's first season, where everyone wanted him in the team. He was clearly brilliant, but you've got to manage him. You know, we can't afford, there's clearly a guy who's going to transform our attack plays, but if you play him 90-100 minutes week in, week out, there won't be a footballer there to utilise. So the Jota was the right decision ultimately, and he has a really good performance from him. And yeah, Darwin gets to come on and have the impact. Great. More of that, please. Okay, cool. We're going to take a short break when we return. A couple of things just in terms of the importance of those 3 points. And I want to talk a little bit about the atmosphere. Seen lots of talk around the apparently crap atmosphere of the derby. But we'll address that in part two. See you in a sec.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yes, if you haven't done so already, head to redmanmerch.com and grab your knitted Christmas jumper. Selling fast. Once they're gone, they're gone. I'm aware. I've said this for weeks. It's October. But, you know, early bird gets the jumper. Right.
What they say.
Yeah, is it that famous saying? And if it isn't, it is now. We'll get that on a T-shirt. Chris, the 3 points. And I think you can tell, we mentioned it before, 10 man, it's Everton, blah, blah, blah. it's the run of games coming up.
Yeah.
This is where a title challenge is going to be built for Liverpool. We're going to be looking on the Bias Football podcast this week, because I've been saying all season, and for every season it's 10 games. Look at the league table after 10 games, see where that stands. Liverpool have got a very good chance to be right in contention. But we talked about it in the build to the game. If you don't beat Everton, all of a sudden you've lost to Spurs, you've drawn with Brighton, and you've lost or drawn to Everton. You're in bad form, and the momentum you've built all of a sudden has turned against you. It was just beyond important to make sure they got over the line in this one.
Yeah, of course it was. Obviously, the derby is a massive thing, you know, for everybody who's a Liverpool fan, and for obvious reasons. And you have to beat the teams who are worse than you. You know, you have to almost beat everybody to win a league title nowadays. It's actually funny. I was sort of thinking about this, and I don't know the best way to phrase it, but it's like, I've for years been like you, like 10 games, 10 games, but it feels like this is a weekly league almost now, where everyone's opinions on sides are almost shaped on a weekly basis, and we actually don't know anymore until way late who were the good ones and who were the bad ones. And it feels like, you know, us, Arsenal, Tottenham, Manchester City, we're all going about our business at the moment. Aston Villa as well, of course, you know, but after the first couple of weeks of the season, they were terrible, you know. And I think that's the 24-hour news cycle thing, isn't it, where everybody focuses on absolutely everything at all times. It's obviously important. It's a good run of games for Liverpool. It's the hardest one out the way now. The early kickoff was obviously a thing that we have to deal with. I think that might have fed into any atmosphere issues, if there were any in the ground. But ultimately, you've just got to win. And winning without playing your best is always championship form.
Yeah.
That's never going to change. No matter how we analyse, how we talk about football, we're not even into, you know, what gear do you go into? Because we always say out of second, we're not in fifth gear yet.
No,
yeah. We're nowhere near fifth gear. This side is still coming together. You know, you talked about the midfield a little bit earlier. It's funny, isn't it? When you've got great footballers, they all want to do their own little things, but it's not until they mesh together and there's that sort of understanding where you start to see the best of them. Inside the first 5 minutes, there was some play through the middle against Everton.
Ended up with
Mo Salah fucking it up, which was some of the best football I think I might have ever seen at Anfield. They're the moments that you need to turn into spells. You know, they need to last 10, 12, 13, 15 minutes, whatever, instead of just one moment, and then you don't see it again for the rest of the game. That's the stuff that we're aiming for. And the more moments you start to get, the more it will turn into spells.
We've lived on this knife edge, Chloe, for years, where it feels like you've got to win every single game of football, otherwise you can't win the title. We kind of got lucky the last two game weeks because of how other fixtures fell and rivals not pulling away with it. City dropping points has actually helped everyone feel there's a world, an alternate universe where City have got probably another 6 points on the board and we're all going, well, that's all done and dusted now already. That's what puts this little run of games into such sharp focus, is we got away with one. We could get away with losing and drawing a game of football and not be totally out of the running. But then you can't, your margin for error's gone. You can't then lose to Everton, and you can't lose to Forest, and you can't lose to Luton, and you can't lose to Brentford. Ideally, you want to be putting 12 points on the board after these. Momentum, it's not really a real thing, but it feels like it is. And to not win the derby, I think, totally cuts the legs off what we're trying to do in this period. So it's great that we can just kind of put it to one side and go, all right, who's next?
No matter how crap Everton Football Club are, it's a derby, and it is a massive game of football, and it's a game where Liverpool have sometimes came unstuck, mainly at Goodison rather than Anfield, but it's never nailed on no matter how crap they are. It might feel like that to you, but it doesn't to me. And I think Liverpool out of the top six have possibly had the hardest running so far to start the season. And to say that the 1 point, potentially three, how I think Spurs will win tonight, off the top is ridiculous. And now we've had our spell of really hard games, and we will have another spell. But up until the November international break, we've got winnable fixtures that you think, right, well, we can gain points on other teams here. And by the time our hard fixtures come around again, because I think we've got Arsenal, Newcastle and Manchester United all in December, all around Christmas. That is vile. By the time those games come around, by the time those games come around, hopefully the results and the performances that you put in against the side that should be winnable have helped you either create a little barrier, so if you do fall, you know, you've got a cushion to fall on, or, you know, those games mean even more, and when you get big points out of them, it causes worry in the rest. And what we've got to realise is we've got another international break, and after that international break, it's straight into City, and it's City away. You need to use every ounce of, you know, positivity and bounce to get into that game. You need to scare them. You need that game to count for something. And you need to put yourself in that position, and to do that, you need to win these games. And I think it would have been a lot harder, because Everton is a team, Liverpool should be beaten based on the fact of what they've got on their starting 11 and what they can do. And if you would have dropped points, especially down when they were down to 10 men, and when it felt like Liverpool really should have scored from several, you know, counter-attacks, there would have just been a little bit negative atmosphere. Well,
it counts
as
the Newcastle vibes, you know, like, yeah. If Newcastle gave us that thing of like, this side will go, we'll find ways to win, and Tottenham could have done that, but there were so many extenuating circumstances that we all end up taking that as a bit of a positive. Don't fucking lose. I mean, it was like Klopp, I thought he was really interesting down his pre-match press conference. He was like, I don't care about the record that we've got about. I don't want you to talk about it. Let's not talk about it, because there's no need to add extra pressure to all this. No. But I think Chloe's point's right. That's what the aim is. We got to go to the Etihad after the next international break. And your worst case scenario is it's not a title decider. And what I mean is we've had them so early in seasons, and whoever's won that has pretty much gone on and won the title. Certainly the year we won it, it really felt like, and it was too early to say it at the time, but it was, we put a real gap at that game. You know, we'd managed our season up to that point. We were talking about the Aston Villa game of not playing Fabinho and Villa, so he wasn't suspended for Man City, and we beat them. And there's sliding doors where there's a swing there, and it ends up in Liverpool's favour. Our worst case scenario is if we lose at the Etihad, which is very possible. The worst case is that it's
4
you know,
points.
Exactly. It's four points, which is recoverable.
Yeah, 100% it is, yeah. And I think sort of on the back of Saturday winning the derby, that does set us off on this run now. Fixtures that do look favourable. But not for me, like, regardless of who we were playing, I always look at us as being capable of putting a run together that's just perfect. And I think looking at what's to come now, I see no reason why we can't do that again. And we can go into that Man City game with it not being so much pressure on it. Like, obviously you want to go there, and if you can go there and go in with the sort of the mantra, if we're ahead of City by that point, which I kind of expect us to be looking at the fixtures, I really do, because they've obviously got the Manchester Derby coming up next and stuff like that. I think there's no reason why we can't go into that ahead of them at worst, where Tottenham and Arsenal are at that point. Who knows, really? But yeah, I think we can, and I think we will, to be honest with you. I don't see anything stopping us in terms of what's to come, in terms of the fixtures. So, but you're right, if we go there and it's not sort of the be-all and end-all of, if you get beat, that's you, done and dusted, then that's just a huge relief. Because going there is so, so important for titles. And if we can go there and just get a draw and quite happy with a draw, that's sound by me.
Absolutely.
Also, Arsenal's point against Chelsea makes ours look really good as well. Hopefully when City have to go there, they come a little bit unstuck.
Well, them getting better might help us, because they might take points off people like Arsenal.
We were saying this, we're going to do a little bit on the Newcastle and the Tonali stuff in the bias as well, but yeah, there's just something to, sometimes things are worse for you because it makes it easier for opponents, and other times it can work the other way around.
They all have Aston Villa as well, where we've played them.
Absolutely. I want to talk about the atmosphere then, because honestly, I didn't give it a second thought after the game. I didn't think the atmosphere, I had no particular standout thoughts. I didn't walk away from the derby thinking that's the best Merseyside derby I've ever experienced. Far from it. I didn't think that was in my top 10 or anything. You know, I just hadn't given it a thought at all. But I saw a rash of comments around it on the vlog, and I've seen a few bits on Twitter, and I've seen a few things on Redmen's comments as well, of people talking about the atmosphere. And I don't know how many of those people were in the ground, but I feel like, because I put the game back on again, so I had bread on in the background while I was editing when I got in last night, I feel like it might have been mentioned in commentary, which I think always has an impact on people's opinions on stuff. What do we think of the atmosphere?
Sam, it's all right.
Where I was pretty poor, to be honest with you.
But by comparison
to... Right, let me give us some background first of all. I'm normally in the cop for these games.
Yep.
I ended up in the Upper Kenny for this one. I sit in the Upper Kenny for the Auto Cup scheme, so I know that block. Compared to what that normally is, it was a great atmosphere. Compared to
my
how
dad was
I,
going, they were singing in the Upper Kenny. He was made up.
Compared to how I normally experience a derby, a very different atmosphere, shall we say. But I'm, when I'm there, you know where the seat is, you're sort of 20 yards towards the away end more than anything. So you can obviously hear the cop, but you can hear the away end more because they're just closer to you. And 305 is the other side, you know, as well. So it's a little bit further away. It sounded like the cop was fine to me by what I can normally hear from a Europa League game and all that, and obviously, you know, the cup games and stuff. But it was just a bit different for me.
A thought, Carl? I think there was a period in the second half where it was quite subdued.
Yeah. I thought up until Ashley Young got sent off, it was really good. I thought it was sound. We were going through songs. And actually, whilst nothing was happening during the game, all of my videos were just songs and chants. And Paul Scouser Tommy was really good. That was sung quite a couple of times, actually. And then once Ashley Young got sent off, I think we had maybe 10 minutes left in the half. It kind of went down because Liverpool didn't seem to capitalise enough and we were kind of frustrated. And at the start of the second half, it was like everyone hadn't got back to the seats. Yeah. I agree. It was a bit crap at the start of the second half. But then when once again we changed the formation and everything and we really went for it, I thought it was good again. And then there was a point where it's just expectation of 1-0 up, done, dusted, really, it's Everton. And I think it got a bit quiet again. And I think the second goal, there wasn't as big of a let-off as you'd imagine it would be.
Yeah.
I think that was just because people were like, well, Everton have offered absolutely nothing. When in my head it was, oh my God, they've got a corner in the 95th minute, oh my God. I think everyone else was like, yeah, Virgil van Dijk's had an absolute lovely game. Alisson Becker's there, we'll be fine. Where I was really nervous, I think a lot of people were just more calm and the expectation was we'll just win.
The context is important, I think, for this, Dan, and it's a shame because it is a derby.
Yeah.
But also, I think people talk about the Anfield atmosphere like it's this uniform thing, and then when it's not like the best of the best of the best, they go, oh, it's obviously there for a myth, which is fucking horseshit. It's absolutely fucking horseshit. There's obviously games where it's better than others. My contention is the worst atmosphere at Anfield is better than 95% of the atmospheres prior to Jürgen Klopp coming in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from the cop just basically being standing. It's been almost, people have stood almost exclusively for every game. More and more, it wasn't totally like that in the early years, but I think Chloe's point,
the season we were going for top four, that's when everyone started to stand up more. At the start of the season, not so much, but halfway through that, when there was something to fight for, that's when everyone
I remember people that Middlesbrough game, guys, a guy kicking off by me because there's people around me wanted to sit down, he was going, well, fucking stand up, and that I haven't seen anything remotely like that for years. But the context of the game, we have this when you play teams where they don't have the ball. Well, normally what happens when you'll sing a song, and if the song lulls, you'll just boo when the opponents have got the ball, and then that'll give you a chance to catch yourself and then sing another song. When they've not got the ball, you can't boo, so you can't generate that noise. And Cody's about that weight of expectation of it's nil-nil, it was a little nervy, a little edgy, and I think the crowd got a little bit like that, but that gets forgotten. Game state is important. It isn't blanket noise from start to finish in lots of games of football.
No, it's not. Of course it's not. It wasn't exactly the blood and thunder of a derby that we've seen in the past either, was it? And the half-12 kickoff plays into that. Of course it does. After international break, maybe a little bit as well. But I think, personally, I've been to loads of games at Anfield, of course, but I think the expectation of what's going on in the game and sort of what's happening in front of you does sort of play into the atmosphere massively so. And if there ever is a sense of jeopardy, regardless of the opposition at Anfield, I feel like we do go again and we can rouse the players. I remember being at a West Ham game. I think Pablo Fornals give them the lead, and all of a sudden Anfield was not quite Barcelona levels in terms of that night, but it wasn't too far behind. So the opposition and who we're playing against is a factor, but if Liverpool are in jeopardy and Liverpool might drop points, we go again. Anfield can, like they rouse itself up until that point. But for me, it frustrates the life out of me when Brentford, clutching a team from thin air, come and say, where's your atmosphere? It's like, I'm not being funny, lads, but you're Brentford.
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah, like literally, like, with all due respect, but don't get me wrong, if you go 1-0 up,
yeah,
then you'll see. You know what I mean? But when it's 1-0, 2-0 to Liverpool, and we're just coasting and they're expecting this raucous Anfield, it's like, come on, what do you think? Like,
it is like football entitlements, as you're describing almost, because I agree with this, is that we don't, if there's a club that we feel that we want to knock down a peg, or we need to really fight, it's like you made it to the top of the mountain, you're like the aged heavyweight. If you know you're going to pummel on your opponent, you don't showboat it. You get it done and you get off, don't you? But if someone lands a blow, oh, fuck me, right? I'm sorry, this is where I'm bringing out all of what I've got. And so you're right, you've got your Brentford, Southampton's always my example of this, but Brentford, Southampton, Fulham's, these bunch of teams who are, I wouldn't want to be like, in your face and all this kind of, yeah, give them loads of shit, because
the middle of the road football team.
No, I know, yeah. And again, that's a cockiness or an arrogance, I don't know, but that's how it is. That's how it's always been for me when we've played those teams. But the difference is, from my experience of going to Anfield, people talk about the atmosphere now, those atmospheres are still miles better than they ever were at anything I went to. In talking about like the yellows and the reds, I went back, as the one that stands in my mind was Les Ferdinand being sent off at QPR against us, and I remember being at that game. I went back and looked at it. For a start, there were two reds in that game, which I'd forgotten the other one. 23,000 people were at Anfield for that game. It was a midweek game against QPR. 23. Can you imagine? It doesn't happen. So this notion that somehow atmospheres were brilliant in the past and now they're not is nonsense. It's absolute and total utter bollocks. We, for those games that we're talking about, the ones that aren't, we've got loads of expectation on them, we never even used to fill half the ground, let alone create an atmosphere. You know, I used to sit with my dad in those seats up in the upper centenary. And I would know all the opponents' chants because you'd hear them all game long. You know, I'd find myself like humming along to them and not realising I was doing it. So, yeah, I know, I've seen a lot of people talking about it, but I'm not saying that was the best atmosphere I've ever been involved in, but the idea that there's any issue with the atmosphere at Anfield, horseshit, total horseshit.
The atmosphere at Anfield might be different to everywhere else because it's very much like, when the players need us, that's when we show up.
But if
we think they're fine and, you know, the Sarnie don't need us, then, yeah, we'll sing our tunes, but we won't go all out. Leicester is another one. Their fans gave us something to get angry at, and they gave us something. And when you give Anfield something and you piss them off, we will wake up and we will. And I don't care what you say. James Maddison turned around and said, Anfield's the best atmosphere I've ever played in. He's playing for Spurs now. Everybody does. Exactly. There's no way these footballers who play all around the world in all different stadiums with all sets of fans, including international fans, where fans of Chelsea and fans of Arsenal all still go, like, enjoy England. Like, there's no way that these footballers are saying, oh my God, Anfield, it's the atmosphere. You don't say it for no reason.
Every great player of the last 20 years, every great manager of the last 20 years all talk about it. And there's a lot of times in that period where Liverpool weren't great either, to be honest. But you're right. It's one of those, I've seen someone saying, like, you know, there's fans of lower league teams and they have consistently great atmospheres, and they do, but they've got a smaller fan base and a more dedicated fan base in that. If Anfield was a quarter of the size and it was filled only with still an outnumbering force of the absolute diehards, the diehard of the diehard of Liverpool fans, it would be that. And I agree, there's a dilution the bigger the ground gets. When it's best, at its best, it can be better than it's ever been, because if you can get 63,000 people, so 61,000 people when it's finally done singing from the same hymn sheet, then that's going to be absolutely something else.
The other thing is we're in that weird part of the season, aren't we? Obviously the expectation, everything that you've spoken about there was, I think, absolutely spot on, to be honest. But we're in that sort of crossover period with the team whereby we haven't got a Bobby Firmino song that we can sing anymore. There's no Sadio Mane song.
Yeah.
You know, Jürgen's asked us to stop singing until after the game or the very end of the game. The Jota one's the only one that's sort of relevant at the moment that gets the ground going. And Ale, 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 I don't know about yous, I've always felt a bit weird singing it and not on European nights. Yeah. Never used to at the beginning, but there was a turning point, I don't know when it became a European chant for me. And so I think we're waiting for those that big sobber slide chance or a moment from one of these players for us to be able to find this season's groove in terms of the songbook.
That's right. Liverpool have got a huge songbook of songs, but you're right. When they go back to the base level ones, which is Fields of Anfield Road and Poor Scouts and Tommy and the countless variations on chanting Liverpool, they're fine. They're all there. Everyone knows them, but they're not the ones. I mean, Fields of Anfield Road can be massive when it wants to be, and obviously Ale's got its place, but you're dead right. You know, in our 2 or 3 years ago, you could rattle through half the players on the team had one, and they would all be to equal place. We haven't even got Andy Robertson on the pitch, you know what I mean? Like, so like there's the one that he would have been like sixth or seventh down the pecking order for. It I don't think this Trent Alexander-Arnold one's very good, so that's not one that really catches fire. Van Dijk's a centre half when their team does nothing. You're not singing your song about your centre back, are you? And you're right, so this is our like the transition period out where Szoboszlai's going to get one at some point. You know, Nunes has got a chance. He'll get a chance. He'll get a proper song at some point, and then we'll have tons. I think that's a really good point.
The thing is also we're in that position where we don't, like, I think we're all hoping to be in a title race, but you can't say that you're in it.
Yeah.
And once it actually comes down to every single point matters, because you know you're in that title race. At some point around Christmas, it'll switch if Liverpool are still up with Manchester City, and it'll be, lads, we've got to make this a cacophony of noise. You've got to make it a fortress. You can't, no matter if it's Brentford, if it's Fulham, if it's City, if it's United, every single game, the lads are going to need us, and at 0-0 we're going to scream and we're going to sing and we're going to chant, and it's all because there's something to lose, there's something on the line there. And right now I think we're in the middle of, are we in a title race, could we be in a title race, but actually, you know, what are we doing? We don't have a DM, an out-and-out DM. Can this like, there's a lot of people who didn't expect Liverpool to be where they are right now. A lot of our fans didn't expect us to be in a title race. And once we finally understand out where everyone is closer to Christmas, that's when you'll realise if Anfield has a sniff that we might have a chance at a title, oh my God, move out the way, because you don't want to be in the stadium.
It's the building blocks of the season, isn't it? Absolute building blocks. Right, shout out. Come and join us for more chat. We're going to be doing the Bias Football Podcast pretty much about 10 minutes after this one finishes over on redmenplus.com, which promises to be very good fun indeed. There is a code. Is the code biased?
Yes.
Yes.
How do you spell that?
B-I-A-S-E-D. B-I-A-S-E-D. To get half price subscription for 2 months. Head over there, choose a captain monthly subscription and get it half price for 2 months using the code BIAS. We're going to be looking at next week's round of fixtures, that 10-game threshold, and making predictions for what the league's going to look like. We're going to be looking at the Chelsea-Arsenal game and just some of the hilariousness that happened around that. Rotating your goalkeepers, Mikel Arteta, good work. And a few other bits and pieces as well. So do come and join us on the Bias Football Podcast. Promises to be a good laugh, and we'll see you over on redmenplus.com. Have a boss Monday. Ta-da.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.